And that includes the museums in Leningrad, which everybody says are so terrific. I was very disappointed in them. We would go by subway. We would call the people. They would tell us how to, which subway to take and how to get there.
You went with a partner?
Yes, everybody went in twos. Nobody went alone.
Uh-huh.
We were told, of course, before we left that if there was any problems anywhere along the way, not to answer any questions, to ask to speak to the American embassy before anything. But we had no problems. We would get a subway. And we met at the other end. We called the people, and they'd meet us at the other end. And then walked to the apartments. Now, the whole time I was in Russia, I never saw a house. All I saw was miles and miles and miles of tenement-type apartments, and that's what the apartments were like inside. The dissidents, the refuseniks that we visited, were under far worse circumstances than even the other people. And even at its best, there was nothing great. But we visited them, we took things to them, we took several people out to the Beryashka shops where we could shop and where the Russians could not.
Well, did the authorities know that?
Well, there's some question you see, it would be impossible for them to watch everybody. We went as tourists and we signed up with the tourist group. We started out very often with the tourist group and then somewhere along the line left them and went on our way ourselves, got a cab and went to some point and went somewhere else.
Dissident families did you visit, do you recall?
In Moscow, there must have been about four or five. When we got to Kiev, we had arrangements to call people, but we were told when we got there, we were wired from New York, that Kiev was absolutely as anti-Semitic as you could get, and that we didn't dare contact them at that time, other groups before and after. So we visited Babi Yar, which was so touching. It was such a touching memorial.
They don't mention that it's a memorial to the Jews, do they?
No, they don't give them credit for it. And the Jews were the ones who were massacred. The Russians turned the Jews over to the Germans who massacred them.
But there's no sign there.
None at all. But we said Kurdish, and we were there, and it was so touching. I was really, really touched by it all. And then we went to Leningrad. And in Leningrad, we maybe saw four or five families. We visited the families in their apartments, and they in turn invited some of their friends. So there was always a large group in each.
How do those people live, the dissidents? They have no income, do they?
No, it's tragic. You see, the minute they ask for a visa, they're fired from their jobs. And if they don't have a job and they're not working, then the Russians say, "You're parasites. You don't work. We're not going to give you anything." So it's a struggle. They work at any job they can get. Some of the people we met were engineers who were sweeping streets, who were working in parking lots during the night in jobs that nobody else wanted, and just eking out an existence. And we went with, we took some things to help them.
Did you ever hear from these people?
One is coming here. Sonia Melnikov is coming here. She's coming Friday, and she's going to be here over the weekend. She's going to be at the Word of Shalom on Sunday morning at 10:30. It's hard to get letters in and out of there, but the memory of those people will never, ever leave me, the people we visited.
And you don't know whatever happened to them, if they're still there?
Well, we hear occasionally. Somebody in our group will say, "I heard from so-and-so, and so-and-so died." Because one of the men we had visited was very, very sick, and they later told me he died. And we'll occasionally hear of somebody that we saw, but I'll never forget them.
Do the children feel the same way as they do, or are some young people also dissidents?
Well, sure, because their parents are. And they're very unhappy because they're ostracized. They're not allowed to participate in those things just because they want to leave. And the question is often asked, if they want to leave, why doesn't Russia let them go? Why would they keep them? And the answer to that is, there isn't an answer. The people there believe that Russia is holding them hostage. They believe that someday Russia wants to be able to bargain with Israel or bargain with America and say, look, you give us this, we'll let the Jews go. And they feel that they're being held as hostages. That's the only reason. The Russian answer is, when you say, why won't you let them go? Their answer is that these people that want to go all worked in some secret department and that they will divulge the government secrets if they leave the country, which is not true. Then very often these people are arrested on trumped-up charges, on having drugs, and things of that sort. But it was some experience. I really, really will never forget it. And I'm glad I went for whatever help I could give them.
Did you bring religious articles with you, or was it food that you gave them? What did you...
Well, we were afraid that we couldn't get by with religious articles. We didn't know how close they'd search us. But we took, I was told by the committee that the women had no cosmetics. They loved lipstick and things of that sort. I packed as much as I could that type of thing, luxuries, things that they couldn't get. And I took maybe 50 pairs of pantyhose. I unpacked them all out of the packages and wrapped them up in balls and stuck them places. I took a lot of woolen children's clothes for young children. Then we went in October, and it was getting close to the holidays, and we took honey because they said they couldn't get that there. There isn't too much you can take, but what we did when we got there, they have stores in Russia, as you know, the Beryoska shops, where the Russians are not allowed to shop. And so what we did, we went there and bought stuff, and we took it back to these people. We bought huge bags and bags and bags of stuff and took to these people. We bought things for them that they, you see, Russia doesn't have material things, so that the people, the Russians, would give anything. They have money, but there's no, they can't buy anything with it. So that we bought those huge radio boxes, I don't know what you call these things that the kids carry. Our friends could then sell them to the Russians in the black market and get enough money to survive for a whole year. So that we did things like that. We went out and bought things that we thought they could then sell on a black market and get enough to survive for a long time. So we did a lot of that. We spent a lot of time going to the Beryoska shops. But the amazing thing was, when we went into these stores to buy anything, the Russians would look at us through the window and the hate on their faces for Americans. So they couldn't buy the stuff, and here we are, rich Americans, coming out with all this stuff. Of course, I don't know that they knew what we were going to do with it, and I suppose they thought we were buying it for ourselves because we had money, you know. And we didn't buy it, of course, for ourselves. But we were able to take it to the families, and it was such a satisfaction. I was so happy to be able to do something for them.
Well, that certainly is a good feeling.
Oh, yes.
Carrie, with you. And when were you in Israel?
Then I went to Israel 3 years ago, 4 years ago, and I went with a group of congressmen from Pennsylvania who were invited to go. And the purpose of that trip was so that the congressman, when any bill came up before Congress that would aid Israel, they would then act favorably on it and look upon it favorably. So we went and there were 8 or 9 congressmen from the state of Pennsylvania. And it was a very interesting trip because Israel had its best foot forward. You know, they showed it. We visited every city, and we were met by the mayor of every city. And we went clear up to the line. We were clear up to the demarcation line. Clear up to the line where they were fighting.
Lebanon.
Clear up to the line where they were fighting. And we visited a couple of kibbutz. But the main thing was political. We visited. And we went to the Knesset, where we were met by Ben-Gurion men. Not Ben-Gurion.
Begin.
Begin. Instead, I have a picture of that. I don't know that.
How many people were on your trip with you?
On that particular trip, there must have been maybe 20, 25 on that particular trip.
So you met Begin
at the Knesset? At
the Knesset.
And we went to every city in Israel, major city, and where we were met by the mayor of the city. And it was interesting.
Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
Did you discuss anything about your political life in the United States or in the city of Pittsburgh?
We really went to listen. I took presents from the city of Pittsburgh. I took things that signified Pittsburgh. I took plates that showed the Pittsburgh skyline, things of that sort. But mostly I went along so that the congressman would get a good feeling. We have a good feeling for Israel, so that if anything came up in Congress pertaining to Israel, they would be familiar with it and they would know. And they were impressed. I think you can't help but be impressed with Israel.
How did you get in with it? Did you volunteer? Did they ask you to go on this trip?
Well, some time ago, I said I would like to go to Israel. I mean, this trip came up. They asked me if I would go along as a sort of an escort, because I knew them all. Sort of, and I spoke Yiddish, although I was amazed at how many people spoke Yiddish when I got there. They then told me that there weren't very many who did, that they all speak Hebrew.
It's the older people.
Yes, that I met a lot that spoke Yiddish. That was one of the reasons. As a matter of fact, that was one of the reasons I went to Russia, and I did meet some old Russian women who spoke Yiddish that I spoke to, too.
Did your husband go with you on these trips?
No, he went to Israel with me, but I didn't take him along to Russia because that was going to be hard, and I knew it was going to be a hard, hard trip, and it was. It rained the whole time we were there. We were on the go in the pouring down rain every day, all day.
I'd like to know about some of your experiences in the White House, what they were like when you went and what functions they were.
They were mostly formal functions. The first ladies would have a lunch for women from the country. And they were very, very formal. Very impressive, because everything was spit and polish. The butlers had white gloves, and they served you with white gloves. Everything was just proper.
Were the spouses invited to the functions in the evening?
Not really. My husband never went to any of them. It was always women's affairs. And most of the things were during the day, afternoon teas, lunches, and things.
Maybe I shouldn't ask you this, but I wondered what you felt about the past presidents that you saw. That you felt were the most outstanding?
Well, everybody loved John Kennedy, I believe, and I did too. I just thought he was going to be the hope of all the young people. I loved Truman. I thought he was great. He was so down to earth, and he talked, you know, he swore like a trooper, and he was great. And Mrs. Truman was just a nice, motherly lady. She wasn't trying to reform the whole world or do anything big. She was great. I liked her. She was my type of woman. She wasn't going to move the earth or anything. I met Mrs. Carter. I did like her as well.
Was she a warm person? Or?
Not really. She was a little standoffish. Jackie Kennedy was a little standoffish, too.
Did you say you went when Roosevelt was
president? My first time was when Mrs. Roosevelt came here to dedicate the housing project, and I was
Do you remember what year that was?
That had to be in the early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just beginning to be interested. And I was at Democratic headquarters, and she came and dedicated the Bedford Dwellings up in the Hill District. It's the first public housing project in the city of Pittsburgh. And she came to dedicate it.
Who started that? I just digress for a minute. Who started that public housing? Do you remember?
President Roosevelt. He furnished money.
Oh, did he?
To cities all over the country for public housing. And that was the first public housing project in Pittsburgh, up in Bedford Avenue. And she came to dedicate it. And I was part of the committee. I was with her. Oh, I was so impressed, because I was very, very young.
Yes.
And then the following year...
That was exciting.
Oh, yes. The following year, she had a reception at the White House. And women from all over the country were invited, and I was one of the ones. And I went with Mrs. Kay. I was one of the ones who was invited to the White House. That was my first time there. And I went to the White House subsequently many times. But every time I went, it was different.
I'm sure that you must have found Mrs. Roosevelt an outstanding woman.
No question about it. She was very dominant. Something about her that just exuded strength. You know, when you were in her company, she just dominated everything. And of course, I was very, very young, and since then I became a little more sophisticated. But at that time, I was just overwhelmed by her, just overwhelmed by everything she did and said.
She was quite a lady, quite a woman.
Yes.
Did you meet President Roosevelt also?
I met him when he came to Pittsburgh. He came to Pittsburgh during one of his campaigns. And he was out of Forbes Field. He spoke at the old Forbes Field, and I met him then. I was part of the committee then, and I met him then.
Of course, we didn't know at that time about his feelings with the Jewish people and the refugees.
No, I didn't, but I was so impressed with him then. Mm-hmm. So, I've met every Democratic president, and I know...
How did you feel about President Carter?
I thought that people underestimated him. I thought that there was some way that he could not be with people. It was something that he couldn't do. It's hard for me to describe it. But I thought he was a good man, and I thought he had good ideas, but he just couldn't put himself over.
Mm-hmm. So that was the last Democratic president.
Yes. Yes. Next year we're going to have another.
What do you think of politically in the future?
I don't know. It's hard to predict. And there's so many candidates in the political field. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about our political situation in Pittsburgh with Mayor Caligiuri? Now, do you feel that will continue, or do you think things will change there?
I think Mayor Caligiuri is a very popular mayor, and I think that he will be mayor as long as he wants to be, and I think he's a good mayor.
Let's go back to your work on the city council. Do you find that quite strenuous, or in working with the council?
Yes, I find it very, very strenuous. I find it hard to concentrate. We have a lot of dissension in council now, and I find it very, very strenuous because I have to concentrate a little harder. I have to sit through a lot of things that I believe are totally unnecessary, a lot of grandstanding that I believe is going on that I think is totally unnecessary. But I like it. And I'm now the senior member. I've been here longer than anybody, than any member of council. Everybody has been elected since I came.
How many years have you
since
been?
76, which would be almost 12 years.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's quite some time.
Yes.
Do you have any hobbies that you like to do? You probably don't have much spare time, but is there any hobbies?
Not really. My hobbies are my grandchildren. When I have any time, I go and pick them up and take them to the zoo or take them to the circus, whatever comes to town. I do that.
You get to see them often?
Oh, yes. And I talk to them several times a day. And whenever I have any free time, this past weekend, they were with me the whole weekend, as you said. When they left, it was a disaster. But they came and stayed. They came Saturday and stayed till Monday. And I like to read. I read a lot. And I take a lot of my stuff from work to read.
How do you find time to do all that?
I do. You know, it's the old story. You can always find time to do what you want to do, if you want to do it. And I do.
Do you do your own cooking?
More or less. If I have half a day on Sunday, half a day on Saturday, or a whole day, I cook a big part of some kind of soup, something. My husband loves that. And maybe I make some kind of a pot roast or something. And then we have that for a few days. And if I come home late and it's like we go out somewhere to eat.
Mm-hmm. And you still keep kosher, you say?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. So you have to shop at the kosher store.
And I do. I usually run over Saturday morning or early. Usually I try to take Friday mornings off and do all my shopping.
Do people know you when they see you on the street? Do they stalk you?
Some do and some don't. And I want to tell you, when I go shopping, I look like I just stepped out of bed because I put old slacks and a blouse on and comb my hair and run. Most people don't even recognize me, which is well. Because I usually do all this. I like to do my own shopping. still go to Murray Avenue for meat, and I go to the strip for vegetables and fish. And
do you bake also?
Yes. And I come in Tashin every Purim. I have never missed a Purim in the last 30 years. And I come in Tashin every, and then I go to Legion. I even give them to the mayor.
I really look forward to that.
Yes. And I don't make the filter fish anymore. I used to, but I don't do that anymore. I think the bot business is bad. But I do a lot of my own cooking. I cook chicken soup every very often. I make my own soups, and I make my own roasts, and I make chowings, and I make all those old-fashioned dishes. I make chopped liver myself because my kids love it. I make a lot of those things myself.
Sounds good
and
to
me. And I bake regular, if you know what
yeah.
they are.
Mm-hmm.
I make those periodically because the kids like them. I made them when she was
I didn't have time to do all that.
If you want to do it, you find time. Some nights I'm up late. Some mornings I do it early in the morning. Or some afternoons, if I have a few hours, I go home and do it.
What do you think of our civic projects, our like the symphony or the New Benetton Center? How do you feel about these?
Well, I voted for them. I think they're necessary. And the city gives them money for that. And I think it's worthwhile. I think we need them. I think we need them. And I think it's necessary for the health of the city.
Are you able to attend some of these functions of the...
Well, there are only some things. I'm not great. I'm not big on symphony. I'm not big on opera. But I like the civic opera. I usually go to that. I really don't spend too much time on entertainment for myself. Because I don't have time.
Yeah.
I have other things that I think have priorities.
What do you feel about our, what we call downtown section of Pittsburgh? Do you feel that...
Well, compared to other cities, and I've been in many other cities, Pittsburgh isn't as bad as they have it painted. Of course, we have no theaters, but that is common all over the country. The theaters have priced themselves out of business. So that we have no theaters, but the downtown of the Heinz Hall has something, the town is lively, and I think when the Benedum Center opens and with the new Vista, and we are going to build a new Riverside amusement center down the strip. And I think
Is that going to be?
It'll maybe take a couple of years.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that it's going to come to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Pittsburgh's doing well. I could do better. Now, of course, we have the big problem of the 4% wage tax that everybody's complaining about. And my opinion is that that's not the problem in Pittsburgh. I think the problem in Pittsburgh is the school busing. Young people do not want to live in Pittsburgh because of the busing. Now, my colleagues all seem to think that it's the 4% wage tax. Now, that 4% wage tax, 2% of that goes to the school district and 2% comes to the city, roughly. It's 2.25% or something like that. So that most of my colleagues swear by the fact that it's the wage tax that are moving people out of the city to the suburbs, but I don't believe that. I think it's the best thing because I've talked to a lot of people, and a lot of young people don't want to move to Pittsburgh because of the busing situation, and I think that's what's doing it. Pittsburgh is an old city. We have a big, old population, as you very well know. Percentage-wise, I think it's something like 20% or something like that in our senior citizens. So that the problem in Pittsburgh, I believe, is the busing, and there's nothing you can do about that.
Do you feel that, with this new technology that's coming to Pittsburgh, I believe young people, do you feel that young people are coming in to
the city? Once it gets, yes, once, you know, they're building a huge center on 2nd Avenue. Once that gets going, I think so. I believe
the old J&L steel.
They tore that all down. If you've ever gone on 2nd Avenue, it's amazing. You won't believe what's happening. And we had a meeting with Mr. Syrett some months ago at Carnegie Mellon, and his plans were just out of this world, just terrific for this big science center, or big technology.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel that that will bring young people?
I believe so. Yes, mm-hmm. I believe so.
Mm-hmm. What about our housing situation?
The housing situation has always been a problem in Pittsburgh. Always. We have awful lot of distressed areas, but nobody wants to live there. In any of the nicer residential sections, there is a housing shortage. There's just no question about it. There aren't enough. Even in Squirrel Hill, there aren't any new apartment buildings or anything real nice. So that it is a housing problem.
I feel, just wondered how you felt like these small towns like Braddock or Swissville. It's too bad they can't become part of the city. How do you feel about that?
Well, that has been, it's called metropolitanism, and that has been a problem in Pittsburgh for 50 years. It would have been much cheaper for all these little suburbs to combine a police force, combine everything that fired in one big metropolitan area, but they won't do it. They don't want to give up their little serfdoms. Each councilman, each chief of police, each mayor wants to be the king in their own area.
And that will probably never change.
And it will never change. It would be a good idea. It would solve a lot of problems. But they won't do it. They will not be a part of
Pittsburgh. Area like Braddock.
They don't want to be a part of Pittsburgh. They want to have their own mayor and their own council and their own police department, their own fire department. And this has been a problem in Pittsburgh for years.
That goes back a long time, doesn't it?
And they've been talking about it as long as I can remember, but they simply won't do it.
Is there anything you can add?
The anti-defamation league. I wondered what cases you may have had that were especially interesting.
Not anything especially interesting. Recently, we had this fight about the manure in front of the building.
Yeah.
I was violently against it. I just thought that...
Against putting it there.
I just felt that mm-hmm. there shouldn't be any religious object. The Christmas tree by itself is fine. The minute they put the crypt and the cradle and baby Jesus and all that stuff, I was violently against it. And I didn't think a menorah should be there, but I was outnumbered. The courts ruled that it could be there. We took it to court. Before that, there was a very offensive program. You see, on a cable system, they have a public service channel where anybody can go and put, be a part of that if they're... And we had a very offensive program on that cable. Of course, I was violently against that, and we took it off. We ended up taking it off. But that's really all that I can think of that's happened recently.
Can you think of anything with the Hadassah or any of the B'nai B'rith, any of the groups that you've belonged to?
Well, the B'nai B'rith just recently gave me a piece of sculpture because of my service to B'nai B'rith at the shore on the Midway Avenue. I should have brought it in, but not really anything.
Was that for Israel Bond?
No, it was just for my dedication and service to B'nai B'rith. And it was a couple of lodges got together and gave me this piece of sculpture. I have it home. It's a really lovely piece. Because I'm always available. You know, any problem that anybody has, they know I'm here and I'll help them solve it for
you. You must work many long hours in the office.
Yes, you see, I operate differently. I find that I can do far more by going through the back door than going public on things. And I have a good report with all the department heads. And I need only to call them and say, "Why don't you do this for me?" And they do. So that I've been able to do a lot of things off the record, shall I say.
Yes, people don't know about aren't public.
Very many, and I don't want them to know about it because very often there are things that maybe shouldn't be done.
Do Jewish organizations come to you then for help?
Frequently, yes. Frequently. And I follow through. I get them whatever they want. I'm always able to do this. Because I've been here so long, you know, and I know just the right person to go to right away.
Well, we think you're wonderful and you've done an outstanding job. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell us or add to what we've been talking about?
I don't know what else I can tell you. Really, I'm a very reticent person, and I don't seek a limelight. And I've always felt that I can do far more behind the scenes than I can by showboating. So that I never saw any of these things. I never wanted any. I never wanted any publicity. I never saw it. It's really nothing. I'm just me, and I want to do what I can, and I do. I work very hard at my job. Maybe I'll add to the Jewish community than my first one. Incidentally, I was president of the Catholic Youth Organization of Pittsburgh for 2 years because I was a board member. And they asked me if I would serve a term as president at the Catholic Youth Organization.
That's wonderful.
Now, can you believe that?
Yes, that's wonderful.
And they, too, gave me a beautiful piece of sculpture.
Well, that must have been satisfaction.
I'm still on the board, and I still go to the meetings and help, too, where I can.
How did you get on the board? Did they ask you?
They were strictly a Catholic organization for many, many years. They decided to diversify. They needed a Jew and they needed a black person. They asked me if I would help them, and of course, being me, I said, sure, I'll help if I can. So I went on the board, and I helped where I could, and I ended up being president for a term. I'm still on the board. I'm still a member of the board of the Catholic Youth Organization.
What do you do? What's that organization?
They are as the name says, a Catholic organization. I'm in Lawrenceville. They work with Catholic young people mostly, now with Catholic seniors almost entirely. It is run by the Catholic organization, but the Catholic Diocese of Pittsburgh, and incidentally, I've met every single bishop that's ever been in Pittsburgh because of my connection with the Catholic Youth Organization. So, you know, there's just so much you can do if you want to.
You go to there.